Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to a Cinematic Universe minisode. I'm Seb Patrick, and joining me to bridge the gap between our Joker and we can now reveal the Addams Family, the original one, not the remake, episodes is...
James Hunt.
Yes, so we're going to do, as a Halloween special, we decided we're going to do the 1991 Addams Family film. As I say, not the recent animation. Although, James, you might be going to see it, so you might mention it.
Yeah, I think it's out by then. I think it's out just before we record, so there's a good chance I will have seen the remake.
Yeah. But for those who don't know, it is originally, the movie and the original TV show are originally based on comic strips, so they are relevant to this podcast. So we thought for a Halloween
there
special...
There is relevant to this podcast as Garfield, A Tale of Two Kitties is.
Which we will get to eventually.
Eventually.
So there's actually been a bunch of news, and I'm sure that there's going to be a load more news as ever between recording this and actually releasing it, but the timing's actually worked out quite well for some pretty major storylines pretty major stories to have emerged that we can cover. Also finally gives us the opportunity to do another minisode, because actually on the website for about 4 weeks or probably more than that now, the latest minisode box has just been that picture of Bob Monkhouse. I really didn't think that would last as long as it had. We did bring Pod Monkhouse to an end pretty definitively on our last episode.
I mean, you say we did, and here we are talking about Bob Monkhouse again.
I was just going to say, those of you who are tired of us running into the ground will be glad that along with the Joker discourse, it's pretty much over and done with. But we haven't completely done with the Joker discourse yet, because we did just want to give James, who was resolutely not going to watch Joker and not going to cover it on the podcast with us.
So James, I just want to say first, the reason I ended up seeing Joker is because I was in New York, I was on holiday.
Humble brag,
I can afford a plane, yeah. A plane flight, not a whole plane. So I was in New York. I was in Manhattan for the day, and late in the afternoon, I got some tickets off someone off the internet for a gig that was starting at 10 o'clock. So I had 4 hours to kill. So I was like, okay, that's fine. I'll go to the cinema. I went to the cinema. Hustlers hadn't started and wasn't on... again for another 3 hours, and Joker was the only film that I had any remote interest in seeing. So I was like, okay, I'll go and see Joker, and that is how I went against all my principles and ended up seeing Joker, just because I needed a place to sit for 3 hours.
And what, just briefly, because we're not going to get into it all over again, but for the sake of completeness, what were your feelings about Joker?
Yeah, it was shit, wasn't it?
Great, we're going to get angry commenters again now.
Let them come, Seb, let them come.
Let's move on, but not before I comment on, I don't think there is anything more New York that it's possible to do than to get tickets off somebody off the internet for a gig that starts at 10 p.m.
I didn't get back to my Airbnb until 3 a.m.
And then getting back to an Airbnb at 3 a.m. and seeing a film that is a rip-off of King of Comedy and Taxi Driver with Robert De Niro in it.
I went to was for the Cybertronic Spree, which is a band dressed up as Transformers in really excellent costumes who cover cartoon theme tunes and songs off the Transformers soundtrack.
Again, just getting more and more... New York hipster here. I hope you had some Sparrow pizza.
I mean, the gig was next door to Katz's Deli as well.
Next, you'll be telling us you went to St. Mark's Comics. Well, that's actually shut down now, hasn't it, I think?
Yeah, it has closed. Sadly. I believe. I didn't look.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Let's move on to some really, really big news. I mean, those of you who are less keen on sort of behind-the-scenes-y corporate structure news that we talk about sometimes, and we really should have got Joe on back on for this one, shouldn't we? This might not be up your street, but it is the kind of thing that we do like to talk about. In fact, we were noted for talking about this kind of thing on our recent appearance in Pod Bible magazine. So thanks.
Humble brag.
Yeah. Kevin Feige. I'm sure people will have seen this already, but the news is Kevin Feige has he been promoted? Is it just a new title? But really, the long and short of it, and we can get into the breakdown of detail of what seems to be the case, but effectively, Kevin Feige seems to be going from being in charge of Marvel Studios to being in charge of pretty much all of Marvel, at least creatively, not from a licensing and kind of publishing and marketing point of view, but effectively creative control of Marvel film, TV and comics now seems to fall under Kevin Feige's purview.
Yeah, I would say he has become sort of the chief storyteller of Marvel, regardless of media.
Mm.
Which makes sense, because the stuff he's been doing with films has been extremely on the money.
I think it's partly that it's been extremely on the money, and I know there are people who will dispute that because there are people who don't like the MCU, although why they would be listening to this podcast still, I don't know. I think probably the key thing, more than it just being of a certain quality, is that it's cohesive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that Marvel, I think, in other areas has really struggled with in recent years, to have what feels like a coherent and cohesive vision at the top.
Yeah,
of their,
I mean, it used to be the job of the editor-in-chief, at least in the comics, it was the job of the editor-in-chief, and probably, I mean, it's been a while since there was a Stan Lee-type figure running Marvel Comics. I think Stan Lee did it, Jim Shooter definitely did it. There was that weird period where there were five editors-in-chief, and that was bad. Bob Harass was quite bad. Joe Quesada was really good, and
I think it, for a while, and maybe not towards the end of his time, but certainly for a good long while in the early 2000s, you could point to Joe Quesada at the top of Marvel. It felt like everything cascaded downwards from Quesada. He was making big hiring decisions. I don't know, you know, he probably wasn't necessarily plotting out what the big storylines were, but it did feel that everything sort of came out from
him. He was setting the direction in a very definitive way. And actually, I think his success, you can point to the fact that he is the first editor-in-chief since, I think, Stan Lee, who got promoted out of the role rather than fired.
Mm. Yeah.
But, I mean, he was previously, I'm not sure how directly it was, but he was previously a sort of chief creative officer. Is that the title? He had the same title at one point that Kevin Feige has now, put it that way.
Which Quesada did, I think. Yeah. I don't even know what Quesada's title is now.
At the time, it didn't cover the films or TV.
No, it was kind of effectively, it was just to sit above the... Yeah, so in 2010, he became chief creative officer.
There you go.
But it was effectively a creative role slightly above editor-in-chief to basically... The impression I get from a role like that is you don't have to do as much work, but if you ever want to pop your head around the door and overrule something, then you're allowed to. I mean, it's felt ever since he stepped up into that role that the editor-in-chief role has been... You know, Alonso as editor-in-chief didn't feel like Quesada as editor-in-chief because he had Quesada above him, and I think the same is true for Akira Yoshida now as well. I don't know what his current... What is his current... I'm not even sure.
I looked this up and it's something... I can't remember what it is now, but it's like vice president of... Yeah. Like, story or something, I don't know.
Mm. It is just basically it's a bit like the kind of role that Stan Lee had in later years.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
A sort of, you're around, you can do stuff if you want, but you're not driving the boat.
But yeah, like as a comics fan, I'm quite excited for Feige to be involved in any way, because at the moment, sort of the people running comics report to Ike Perlmutter, who is famously sort of... I don't want to say anything that's going to get me in trouble with lawyers. He has been accused of being vindictive and petty and sort of penny pinching. Mm. To the point where the rumor was the Fantastic Four comic got cancelled because he didn't want to give Fox any sort of promotion for the Fantastic Four characters.
Mm.
And so, you know, having a guy like Kevin Feige, whose storytelling instincts are great and whose, you know, love for the characters and the universe is clearly, you know, well evident in everything that he's done, it can only be a good thing as far as I'm concerned. Mm. Like, there are some concerns that he might say, okay, let's just shut down the comics universe, we'll make it all film tie-ins. I'm not sure that's going to happen. Wouldn't surprise me if we did end up seeing actual proper MCU tie-in comics, because that's something that has been sort of noticeably absent from...
Yeah. It's kind of amazing that we haven't. I mean, around the time of the first Avengers film, didn't they do? They did a comic called Avengers Assemble, I think.
Yeah, that had had the lineup from the movie, but was still in the MCU.
Made the look of it feel a little bit MCU-ish. But yeah, it wasn't... I just don't understand why we haven't had the gaps between stories filled in by comics.
Well, I sort of think that's sort of due to the rivalry between, you know, Ike Perlmutter and Kevin Feige. Because at one point, Feige was under Perlmutter and he got promoted up to sort of his equivalent, but only for films. And now he's, you know, taken on even more of what used to be Perlmutter's domain. So it's interesting to watch that from a corporate perspective.
Mm. I mean, I do kind of think it may, you know, I mean, Marvel moved away from doing things like the Ultimate Universe, but for Marvel to run a universe of comics that is more specifically designed to sell to people who like the MCU and are invested in the MCU, because to me that feels like that would benefit the regular Marvel Comics universe, because the regular Marvel Comics universe doesn't have to worry about trying to line up with the MCU and can continue to be its own
thing. Yeah, I mean, there are two things they could do, right? They could create comics specifically, as you say, in between those continuity gaps. Like, you know, there's the implication that there were tons of Avengers adventures happening between 1 and 2, right? The first two films. They could do a series about those stories that Feige, with his creative control hat on, would be able to say, okay, here's what you do in those books.
Yeah.
They could sort of drag the current MCU closer to the movies. I mean, or they could, you know, just carry on doing what they're doing now, which is treat the comics universe as a bit like a research and development wing for the movies.
Mm.
But either way, I'm expecting to see some form of greater coherence, and that can only be a good thing.
And I think not even just coherence between the different media, although that will definitely happen. I actually think a real beneficiary, I mean, we'll already kind of see it with what Disney Plus is doing, but, you know, we're not going to have a Defenders-type situation with the TV again. You know, the TV is all going to line up much more closely. I think we were all expecting that anyway. I think with the comics as well, though, just what I would like to see is not even more coherence with the other media so much as just you know, I don't really know what the Marvel Universe is at the moment, and I feel less invested in the wider picture of it than I have for a very long time. You know, I've really enjoyed Hickman's X-Men so far, and I will continue to read and hopefully enjoy that. And there's other bits and bobs of things that I'll read, but I don't really feel too engaged with the wider picture, and I don't really know what the wider picture is, if there even is one, in the Marvel Universe generally at the moment. And I kind of feel similarly to an extent with DC. Again, it's sort of, I know what the bigger stuff going on with DC is, and it's more that I'm less interested in, but at least with DC, there is an area of DC that I find really interesting at the moment, which is the range of Superman related stuff, which has been really strong. All the stuff that spun off from that under Bendis, they're in a good place at the moment, so I'm enjoying those comics. But yeah, with Marvel, other than X-Men, which I feel like the way that X-Men is being set up at the moment, I don't think it can interact hugely with any big Marvel picture anyway, other than sort of running up against it.
Well, no, because there was that period, wasn't there, where it was like, Bendis and Quesada and Alonso to an extent, where sort of the meta arc of the universe was always really clear and you knew what the next thing was. And, like, you know, you had Secret Invasion or Dark Reign or, you know.
I mean, admittedly, that did lead to a lot of summer crossovers that we didn't like. But you always knew, even if it was just for the case of banners on the top of the books, and you can go back to those old books now, you can pick up an issue and you're like, oh, that's from when the big picture was.
Yeah, that's,
Norman Osborn
that's
was
Secret
in charge
War,
of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That's or Dark Reign, yeah, whatever. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Whereas now it's a bit like, I know there are a lot of things happening with the Infinity Stones, or there were recently. I don't really get what happened. I think at some point there were two Wolverines, but I'm not really sure. You know, I don't really get what's been, you know, been going on with the wider universe ever since Secret Wars, and that was a couple of years ago now.
Mm.
So, you know, if having Kevin Feige in charge can help drag Marvel's comics back to some sort of more coherent narrative, then great. Yeah. Or even if they can just make the individual books, you know, work better on their own terms, also great.
Because again, yeah, a lot of them at the moment don't. Even there are creators I like on books where I should like what they're doing, and I'm just not super interested since the kind of last big shuffle around.
I do find it at the moment really easy to drop off a Marvel book and then just never get back to it.
But we'll see. The only other thing in terms of concerns, just before we move on from this, that I did want to mention, just because it ties into something that Joe was saying when we were talking about Kevin Feige in the wake of the Spider-Man deal, was, I mean, where's Kevin Feige got the time to do this? Because the fact that he's supposed to be doing a Star Wars alongside all of this, but actually ramping up, you know, this is not him winding down his work with Marvel. This is,
quite.
You know, I mean, I wonder if it might mean that he's not as directly driving the Marvel Studios series going forward. Like, might we actually lose him being the main driving force because he has to delegate more of it? You know, that might be a consequence of this, that he sort of does have the overall bigger picture, but, you know, he's not going to be as hands-on with that ongoing story from now on. That could be the case, but, yeah, I wonder when the guy's ever going to sleep.
I mean, you have to assume by this point he has a big team around him who are going to, you know, shoulder some of that burden, and maybe there are more people who we don't know who help him out more, like maybe, I don't know, Victoria Alonso or whatever will take more of the responsibilities from him.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Either that, or maybe it's just that baseball cap is hiding the fact that his, like, brain.
He's got a leader style brain under there.
Like,
yeah.
Or no, I was thinking more like the numbskulls, but either way works. Okay, so I mean, something that we briefly mentioned and alluded to there, but that brings us on to another bit of not exactly news, but more discussion of possibilities that has come up regarding Spider-Man, and obviously now that the Spider-Man MCU deal has been settled, which I'm taking credit for when I tweeted that on the day of Trump and Boris both getting bad news, that we just needed Spider-Man to be sorted out, and about 2 days later it was. It's not Tom Holland who intervened, it was my Twitter account. But Venom, and it seems like the settlement of the deal seems to potentially be good news for Venom, because it looks like it's opening up the possibility for Tom Holland to actually start to make appearances in that series.
Yeah, so like, we're not really aware of what the specifics of any deal between Marvel and Sony were. But the fact that immediately coming out of it, Kevin Feige said something like, oh, you know, and maybe Spider-Man will appear in some Sony movies now he has the ability to traverse universes or something. Which, okay, that's, I agree with some stuff Joe said in the past, which is that Kevin Feige is very calculated in what he says. And, you know, he doesn't say stuff like that and it be speculation. Like, he knows more than we do, and he's slightly hinting at it. The fact that the director of Venom, Ruben Fleischer, has now said words to the effect of that a meeting between Venom and Spider-Man is inevitable suggests to me that if we don't see him in Venom 2, we'll definitely see Spider-Man in Venom 3. And I think that's a done deal by this point.
I mean, what are your feelings about the possibility of that happening? I mean, because I feel like Venom takes on a different... The first film and then the series of Venom takes on a different feeling when you have the possibility of Spider-Man there. I think it's easy to look at it a certain way knowing that it wasn't in any way connected to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
How does it now feel if that is something that they're building towards as a possibility?
I mean, I can't say I'm excited by it, aside from the fact that it will mean we get to see more of Tom Holland as Spider-Man. I don't know. I don't know what to expect from the Venom series, because everything... The success of the first movie just baffles me, and I think it probably baffles Sony a bit as well, because it was manifestly a bad film that suffered from its, you know, troubled production. They couldn't do Venom 1 again if they tried, because everything about it was an accident. And the fact that it, you know... I think the character had enough of a fan base and enough sort of popular profile to power that movie in the West, and clearly it was a hit with audiences in China and whatever, for whatever reason you want to ascribe to it. I sort of don't think they can do anything about that again deliberately. So whatever Venom 2 is, it's going to be very different from Venom 1. Probably an objectively better movie. I can't say for certain whether it will do as well as the first one did. So one other thing about Venom 2 is that they've also announced that... have they announced? There are definitely rumours. It's been reported online, let's say, that Shriek is going to be one of the villains. So do you remember Shriek?
No.
Have you read Maximum Carnage?
No, I didn't, actually. I haven't read that one. I've read Maximum Clonage.
No, that's not the same thing.
Which they only did because Maximum Carnage had been a success, and they were in the middle of the Clone Saga, and they went, well, if we call this part of the storyline Maximum Clonage, people will want to read
it. Yeah, because that's what happens in comics. Like, something successful happens, and then they just keep naming things similarly. Yeah. Like, that's why every DC series, every sort of 4 or 5 years, they'll do another one that says Crisis.
Yeah,
in some way.
The word crisis just means big story in DC.
So Shriek is a kind of like mentally disturbed woman who has, I think she's a mutant actually, but you know, I imagine in the Sony verse she would not be a mutant. Or I guess maybe they could now. Who knows? Now that Disney have the rights, all the bets are off, right? but yeah. She has the power to, she can fight energy blasts, but she can also sort of psychically enrage people and stuff, like control their emotions. In Maximum Carnage, she's sort of acting as Carnage's like wife slash girlfriend. And she partners up with him and a bunch of nutcases like Carrion and Doppelganger. You know, all your favourite Spider-Man villains.
Good old Carrion.
Yep. Carrion's real name is Malcolm, which I find endlessly hilarious.
I didn't know that.
So she's a fairly major character within the story of Maximum Carnage, which I find interesting because, you know, the villain of Venom 2 is going to be Carnage, right? The main villain. So it seems like they're going to do a kind of riff on that story. It could just be they're sticking her in there to give Michelle Williams' character, like Anne, to someone to fight, possibly. Who knows? Because, you know, it felt like they were going that direction with the sort of She-Venom stuff in the first movie. Don't know. There are lots of ways it could go, and the thing that most interests me is the fact that they're using another villain from Maximum Carnage. So I would say if you want to figure out what they're going to do in the Venom sequel... That's what storyline you have to go and read now.
I was just going to say, you've actually recommended that people go and read Maximum Carnage.
I mean, James, it's not a good comic, but look, in terms of 90s Spider-Man, it was a big deal, right? It sold like absolutely shitloads. It's very popular. It had an excellent computer game based on it. It's got Cloak and Dagger in it.
Tell people to play the computer game.
Hey?
Tell people to play the computer game.
Yeah. It's got Cloak and Dagger. Come on. Everyone loves Cloak and Dagger.
I was going to potentially raise the question of, you know, do we think this actually means that the you know, Venom is effectively in the MCU, but I think that's one of those conversations that you could just end up... it's just pure speculation, isn't it? So
it wouldn't surprise me if say, Spider-Man is in Venom 3. It wouldn't surprise me if the first scene of Venom 3 is Spider-Man falling through a portal and then being like, well, there we go.
Maybe he just zips past all of the Into the Spider-Verse characters anyway. It's like, hey, can I go over there?
Yeah, I think it's very unlikely Venom will retroactively be added to the MCU. No, I think it's more likely they drag Spider-Man out of the MCU temporarily.
Yeah. But then it becomes... I don't know. I feel like if you've gone so far as to create a version of Venom whose origin isn't explicitly tied to Spider-Man, why do you need to then, just because you have the opportunity, shoehorn Spider-Man in at a later point?
Sorry, what do you mean why? Like... $800 million, that's why.
Dump truck full of money. Yeah okay. But creatively, James, creatively, why?
The only thing creative about Venom was the editing.
I mean, yeah, if they were bothered about just creative concerns, they wouldn't be making a Jared Leto Morbius movie.
So, there we go.
Let's all right, well, we're gonna bounce away over from Marvel over to DC, because actually we've had some decent bits of news and kind of set picture leaks and such on upcoming projects. The first thing that seems to have sent a lot of people into a tizzy is that we've got... Now, I can't actually recall if this is official casting at this point. This is one of these things where stories go around, and when we talk about them, they're not official, and then by the time the episode comes out, they are, or they get debunked. But everyone seems pretty certain anyway that Zoe Kravitz is going to play Catwoman in The Batman, if it is still called The Batman. A lot of people seem quite excited about this. I think it is interesting that a young black actress has been cast as Catwoman.
Not for the first time.
In such a major role.
She's the third black Catwoman, right? On the screen.
Yes, after not only Halle Berry, but also Eartha Kitt. Yep. I think that's interesting, but also I don't know if Zoe Kravitz herself is that interesting. One of the things when her name came up was that I immediately thought of several other names who I thought might have fitted the bill a bit better. One of whom we just watched in Joker. I suppose you can't really have Zazie Beetz play Catwoman when she's already played Domino in a very similar costume. But Zoe Kravitz has been in... I mean, she's been in a bunch of stuff that's relevant to this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, she was in X-Men First Class, if you can cast your mind back to the, like, 15 seconds of screen time she had.
Yeah. And she was MJ in Into the Spider-Verse, which I had to be reminded of when we were discussing this.
And isn't she... She was Catwoman in the Lego Batman movie, right?
And she was Catwoman in the Lego Batman movie.
I mean, that's an interesting piece of trivia, at least, is that she played the animated version first, then the live-action version.
So there are two strands to this. There's the fact that it's Zoe Kravitz, which, you know, as I say, I mean, she's fine, but I'm not sure how exciting a piece of casting it is, in the sense of I've never been wowed by her in any...
I mean, the thing is, right, people are going nuts for this, so there's clearly something we're not getting, and either it's because we don't watch Big Little Lies, or because we don't follow her on Instagram or something. People are excited in ways that we aren't, so I think we have to trust them that they know something we don't in this case.
Yeah.
I just saw that Jason Momoa is a stepfather. That's gonna mess up continuity, right?
So he's married...
He's married a woman without gills, that's what he's done. Lisa Bonet.
That's a good reference, Lisa Bonet. Yeah. But then there's obviously just the... I mean, because this piece of casting news was, I think, also the first remotely solid notion that we'd had that Catwoman was even going to be in this film.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a separate issue in itself, right?
I mean, when you say issue, I mean, do you mean negative issue?
I don't know. I feel like the best Batman movies focus on Batman, and when they just start cramming extra characters in there... I don't know. I'd be more excited
if... You say that. It's not going to be a Batman movie with just Batman. Like, there is going to be at least one villain in it.
I guess I was sort of assuming she'd be an anti-hero, but I guess she could be a villain, yeah?
Well, yeah. But also, you say the best Batman movies, one of the best Batman movies has Catwoman in it. I'm a fan of the character anyway.
I feel like I'd be more excited if they did a Batman movie, then a Catwoman movie, then a crossover movie.
I know what you mean, but I think no one's ever going to do a standalone Catwoman movie before they've made the character successful in her own right first.
Because
the narrative on that is you're remaking one of the worst comic book movies ever.
Yeah.
But, you know, as with Robin, Catwoman is one of those characters who has been there maybe even for longer than people realise, because Catwoman appeared in Batman issue 1 in 1940. I think we have kind of reached a point with her as well, because I think she's been a character who's kind of drifted away from Batman and then back again. And I think we are at a point where she's more closely associated again, partly because of what's going on at the moment in the comics. But, you know, the comics are never going to have that big an influence on the films. But I think generally in people's consciousness, she is one of those almost like, you know, you almost don't do a take on Batman without having Catwoman involved somewhere, in the same way as you know you don't not do the Joker.
I mean,
well.
Yeah, no, we've closed that book. keep going.
But anyway, no, I think, and also for a year one type take, which this seems to be, you know, if you're looking to Frank Miller's year one, she's a really significant character in that. So
true.
I can definitely see, even if it's, I mean, to be honest, people have said it's Catwoman, but it could just as easily be Selina Kyle, not necessarily as Catwoman.
Yeah,
in this
yeah,
film.
True. No, okay, you've won me around.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. I think if you want characters for a young Bruce Wayne to bounce off, then having Selina Kyle.
That's needlessly graphic, Seb.
Good one.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Yeah, sorry, I can't do that as well as Joe. Late breaking news. Literally just as I came to edit this episode, news broke this evening of yet more casting for the Batman. I haven't got James in to record an extra little insert for this episode because James has absolutely no opinion on this actor or this news, but I very much do. Paul Dano, who you may know from all kinds of films, Little Miss Sunshine, Ruby Sparks, Looper, and a lot more, has been cast as the Riddler in The Batman. I'm really excited about this because I really like Paul Dano generally, and it's just really interesting. It is an unusual choice. It's not John Mulaney, who I'd seen suggested a little while ago, who I think would be a great Riddler, probably in a slightly more mainstream-sounding Batman film than this kind of seems to be veering towards. I think putting Paul Dano as the Riddler opposite Robert Pattinson as Batman is interesting. I think this film is making unusual choices, and I think may well have an unusual aesthetic. But yeah, I can't be anything other than pleased with the casting of someone who I think has, you know, for the last 10 years or so, been consistently one of the most talented and interesting youngish actors in Hollywood, you know, covering a wide range of projects. So he never seems to do kind of two things the same back to back. And, you know, he's branching out of that by going and doing a superhero movie now. So, yes, exciting news, not just because it gives us the opportunity to make Dano Batman jokes. But, yeah, I would say that definitely I've got more of a reaction to that news than I did to the news of Zoe Kravitz being Catwoman. So, yeah, look forward to seeing what else gets announced for this film and to see what kind of take Paul Dano's Riddler entails. Back now, I guess, to the rest of this minisode. Yeah, so we just wait to see who's going to be playing the 50th screen Alfred in this, I suppose. I did have a thought on this the other day that suddenly occurred to me, which is that it should be Jason Isaacs. No, I'm not going to shift that until it inevitably ends up not being him.
That would be good.
Yeah, I could really see it, and I would really like to see it, but it probably won't happen. Still over at DC, DC's other upcoming film with the in the title, aside from the Batman, is The Suicide Squad. And because they're filming it and they've been incredibly careless about looking down their set, all of a sudden we're starting to get pictures of people in costumes. They've had the effective job of getting people to talk about the film again. I think what's most striking is the first batch of pictures that came out immediately featured ridiculous and brightly coloured costumes. There's a bright yellow and blue costume, which I think is a German actor and DJ and comedian called Flula Borg. I've no idea who he's playing, but he has long blonde hair and a very kind of, to be honest, Guardians of the Galaxy looking costume. Similarly, Mei Ling Ying is painted like orange and again has a very kind of spacey looking costume. But the other one was Nathan Fillion, who there kind of seems to be split opinion as to which character Nathan Fillion might be playing, because he's wearing like green body armor and a helmet, and then on his chest there's an insignia that's a black skull with crossed arms over it. So some people think that this means that he's playing Blackguard, but then other people think that Pete Davidson is playing Blackguard. Blackguard? Blackguard situation, end of conversation. Blackguard. Some people reckon that Nathan Fillion is playing Arm Fall Off Boy. And I'm kind of wondering if I should explain Arm Fall Off Boy or just leave it hanging in the air. But Arm Fall Off Boy is somebody who tried out to join the Legion of Superheroes, actually in not in the kind of classic Silver Age issues, but in an issue of Secret Origins in the 80s, which was drawn by Kurt Swan, the classic Silver Age artist. So it's a sort of, it was a retrospective, jokey kind of tale of the Legion of Superheroes. He was a guy who auditioned for the Legion of Superheroes, and his power was that he could detach his arm and use it to beat people with. And that's literally it. So yeah, we don't know who Nathan Fillion is playing, but he's certainly getting, as with a lot of other these people, a lot of the rest of these people, a brightly coloured costume. Jai Courtney was also there in like kind of a slightly updated costume for Captain Boomerang, and one that sort of much more plays towards the Captain Boomerang of the comics in terms of him having the... I say the Captain Boomerang of the comics, I do kind of actually more... He looks more like Boomer, the original Captain Boomerang's son, who came along in the 2000s, I think. But he's got two massive boomerangs strapped to the front of his chest, so like they're not playing down that imagery with him. We then got a new batch of pictures, literally just, I think, today as we record this, showing Viola Davis back on set as Amanda Waller. These photos had people in prison garb rather than costumes, so it's harder to guess who people are playing, but the report came with a mention that John Cena is apparently playing Peacemaker. So this is all very take with a pinch of salt, because we don't know how confirmed this is. But for those who don't know, Peacemaker is the Charlton Comics character who was the equivalent of Watchmen's comedian.
The comedian, yeah.
Yeah, because the original title of Watchmen was Who Killed the Peacemaker. But Peacemaker was used in DC Comics in the 80s when DC decided to use the Charlton characters instead of letting Alan Moore have them for Watchmen. Obviously, more famously, Blue Beetle and Captain Atom and The Question made it over, but the Peacemaker did also appear in DC and was in the Suicide Squad comics. That one makes sense to me. I don't know if it's true, but it absolutely makes sense that John Cena would be Peacemaker.
See, Damon Lindelof, if you want to riff on Watchmen, that's how you do it.
Yeah. If you want to riff on Watchmen, you do Pax Americana. But it also comes with it. Now, I don't believe there's anything in the images to base this on, so this must come from somewhere else. But apparently the mysterious Idris Elba role that nobody's been able to figure out is reportedly Vigilante. Vigilante's a DC Comics character who's been around since the early 80s. Obviously, he is a vigilante. I got a fair amount of affection for the character because of where he first appeared. Because where he first appeared was in Wolfman and Perez's New Teen Titans. Wolfman basically created him for Teen Titans in order to spin him off into his own series. He's been written by Alan Moore, actually. Alan Moore wrote a bit of Vigilante stuff in the 80s. He's popped up here and there. He's one of those characters who I really liked him in those first appearances, and then I'm not sure I've ever really enjoyed solo stuff of his all that much. But he's definitely, I mean, you know, by the name, calling himself Vigilante, he's one of these characters who he doesn't believe that, you know, your Superman and your Batman and even your Green Arrow and stuff go far enough. So he's a bit of a kind of Vigilante. I was going to make a Punisher comparison and say he's maybe not quite as far along as a Punisher, but he does carry a gun and he's not a million miles away. I think if you were going to say that DC had a version of the Punisher, I think probably Vigilante would be closest to it.
There you go.
So that could be who Idris Elba is playing.
I mean, the thing is, most of these characters are going to die horribly within about 5 seconds of appearing, yeah. Right?
I certainly
probably
think...
Probably the more famous ones.
Well, I was going to say, from the photos that we've seen, I think the more brightly coloured and ridiculous the costume, the greater the likelihood is that these are characters who get introduced as a Suicide Squad, like a team.
Yeah, and then immediately
and
die.
Get wiped out. Yeah. But this, I think the main thing about this is, you know, it's just kind of, you know, blurry long lens set photos. But I think what they show is that this is going to be very James Gunn-ish. They're not holding back on throwing stuff at the screen with this film. They're not holding back on giving ridiculous superhero costumes, even if they're not the costumes that the main characters will be wearing. It just look, even though it's sharing some of the same cast members and it is a continuation and not a full-on reboot, it just couldn't look further away from the first film. And in that sense, you know, I think they're doing absolutely the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, speaking as someone who at least enjoyed the experience of watching the first Suicide Squad, you know, I'm excited for this one too.
I mean, it's the other thing these images do is actually they actually increase in my head the likelihood that he could be playing the writer rather than decrease it. But we'll see. We will see. Just one more bit of news away from Marvel and DC, but that I thought was mildly interesting, was that The Boys Season 2 is now shooting. And I find that interesting because, as you know, I really enjoyed The Boys Season 1. Some photos from the filming, not of any characters, but of kind of set stuff on location, just showed a couple of things that are interesting nods for people who are familiar with the comics. One is of a statue of a character called Soldier Boy. Soldier Boy in the comics is basically the Captain America equivalent, but the thing with him is that there is a manufactured myth that he's been alive since the Second World War. Actually, they keep replacing him every time he dies, and so the guy who's the current Soldier Boy is just this hopeless rookie. But this shows a statue of him with a plaque that says "True American Hero, True American, True. God bless Soldier Boy, 1910 to 1982." The other thing about Soldier Boy is he is a member of the same team as Stormfront, who is the character who has been gender flipped for this show. And there is also a placard showing Homelander and who I th- I believe is Aya Cash in costume as Stormfront, because it looks a bit like her, although I haven't seen confirmation that it's her, and the costume is the right colour scheme for it to be Stormfront, although I can't see any Nazi insignia.
I was about to say, is Stormfront a Nazi, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd be interested to see what happens with with that aspect of things.
I should catch up on the boys, because everyone has said it's great, even people who don't normally love comics movies, so I feel like I should go and pick it up.
Yeah, it is just, it's one of the best superhero-related TV shows that I've seen in a long time. Okay. It's, yeah. I mean, it's I don't want to set it against the
tip. I was about to say.
Conversation, but... I think it's probably objectively better than The Tick. I like The Tick more, but I think The Boys is a better show. They're both great for very.
That's
very
good. I'll watch The Boys and not The Tick then.
You should watch. Arthur needs you. So Boys season 2 coming. Going to be very interesting to see what direction that goes in after the way that season 1 ended. Won't spoiler it for James. It looks like it's going to deviate a lot. It's going to have to deviate a lot from the comics, even more so than the first season did. And this certainly makes it look like it's doing that. That was everything on my list, which, you know, we've done that in 40 minutes. This is what happens when you don't have Joe. Was there anything else particularly that you wanted to cover that we haven't talked about?
Can we just say we're not going to be talking about Watchmen ever?
Yes, I mean, I was actually going to make some kind of reference along the lines of, and a TV show purportedly based on a DC comic is debuting imminently and getting some very positive reviews, but we're not covering it on this podcast. Okay, so that is it for another week's news. Nice tight minisode, but with quite a lot packed in there. We actually, as I say, got to cover some topical news for once, so that's good. So we will be back roughly around about sometime in Halloween week with that Addams Family episode. As I say, we may discuss the new one. We'll probably take the opportunity to talk about Addams Family Values as well, because I can't see us finding the opportunity to do them both as separate films, but they're both brilliant, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun rewatching and talking about them. So look forward to that. Obviously subscribe in all the usual places, leave us a review in all the usual places.
Don't tweet me about Joker, I'm not interested.
Yeah, don't tweet any of us about Joker anymore. We've had tweets, and I'm just no, I've had enough now. Actually, do you know what? I will just on the, because I corrected it on Twitter, but seeing as I said it on the podcast as well, Gary Glitter does not get royalties. That has been confirmed, and I still think it was a bad choice from a creative point of view, but Gary Glitter does not get royalties. That is my official correction on that one. But yes, subscribe wherever you want to. Back us on Patreon, patreon.com/cinematicuniverse. Get in touch with us on Twitter @cine_verse. You know the drill. We'll see you soon for our next proper episode.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.